My name's Josh. My name is Josh. I am one of the pastors here, and we're so thrilled that you're here with us today. Today we have a guest speaker, a guest teacher, and sometimes when I travel around, I meet people, and one of the things that happens, I think, I need to introduce them to the family. The family will like this person. And one of those people is a guy named Colby Martin. I first met Colby in March of 2015 in Marco Island, Florida. And when I met him, he was working on his first book, which recently came out. And he asked me to do a review of his book. So I got an early copy to read. And, you know, when your friends write books and they ask you to review them, it always kind of creates a little nervous. Like, what if the book's not very good? You know, fortunately, Colby's book is incredible. It is incredible. And that book is going to be back there for you to buy and have signed after the service is over today. It's an incredible book. Colby's doing incredible work where he lives in San Diego. And he's going to come talk to us a bit about his journey today. So let me give you an official introduction, the official bio, and then Colby will come and share with us. Colby lives with his wife, Kate, and their four boys in San Diego, California, where they have started a community known as Sojourn Grace Collective. It's the progressive church in San Diego, California. And Colby comes to us today having just released in September this fantastic book, Unclobber. So we would love for you to check this book out at the end of his talk today. So will you, and do me a favor. You know the jokes I make that you don't laugh at? Just laugh at it. Like, we want to be, like, we just spent several weeks being welcoming. So let's make sure we make Colby feel even more welcome than I would up here, okay? So will you join me in welcoming Colby
that's
Martin?
Great. Yeah, thank you. Oh, thanks, Josh. Morgantown, hello. Although, from what I hear, not all of you are from Morgantown. There's some, like, traveling that happens to get here, right? Josh, are you lying to me, or are they just not awake? There's some traveling that happens to get here, right? So it is so fantastic that of all the ways that you could have spent your Sunday morning, you are here this morning. So thank you. Like Josh said, my name is Colby, and it is an absolute privilege to be with you here this morning. Two quick things before I get into what I want to talk about. Cody and the rest of the group, can we just thank them one more time for setting the space for the divine to show up through song? I mean, are you kidding me? When we get to sing words like "we make God's love too narrow," the release of being able to just breathe out, God, forgive us for the ways in which we have ascribed things to you that do not belong. Like, we repent for the ways in which we've constricted the mercy and the love and the grace of God. And to get to be able to do that in song together, it is such a gift. It is such a gift. And then, was it Laura? Was that the name of the gal that got baptized? Remember that? Are you? Yes. Very close. Can I just call you Laura since I already went there? Yeah, it is a beautiful thing when someone steps into their new identity. And really what it is it's not a new identity. It's the identity that's been there all along. Jesus, when he was baptized, one of my favorite stories, because I think the words spoken to Jesus, the rabbi from Nazareth, is the word spoken to all of us. And that word is, "This is my child in whom I am well pleased." And when you step into the baptismal tank or pond or river or lake or sea, or when you get sprinkled or dunked or whatever methodology what they're doing is they're saying, I recognize that the truest thing about me is that I am a loved child of God. I am the child of God in whom God is well pleased. And so you did that this morning, and we got to celebrate that with you. So thank you for letting me get to witness that. So one more time, can we just thank you for applauding you? It is brave. It is brave to say I accept my identity as a loved child of God. Josh said I wrote a new book. That's true. And I'm here to talk about that kind of. So here's what I mean by kind of. The book is called Unclobber, Rethinking Our Misuse of the Bible on Homosexuality. And what I do in the book is I alternate chapters between exploring what are sometimes called the clobber passages, and these are the 6 or 7 verses in the Bible that have been used, or I would argue misused, throughout the centuries to discriminate against those who are not straight. And so I spend every other chapter engaging with the text on this and to say, you know what? I don't think the Bible says what we've always thought it says. And then I spend the other half of the book, the other chapters, alternating between telling a bit of my story. And so that is kind of what I want to share with you this morning. So if you are super intrigued about what I have to say regarding the clobber passages, the book is available back there. I'll sell it to you for a couple bucks. You can get it on Amazon, and that will be a good way to get that. But what I want to talk to you this morning about, and I was told there's a clicker and I have to turn it on. Step one, turn it on. Step two, push the next button. Great. What I want to talk to you about is this. I want to suggest to you that seeking alignment is proof that you're growing. That's the title of my talk today, How Seeking Alignment is Proof That You're Growing. And what I hope to do this morning is offer you a word of encouragement. So your mission statement, empowering people to take the next step on their journey with Christ. Fantastic mission statement. What I want to do this morning is step in the middle of that a little bit, and I want to encourage you with wherever you're at on your journey, with wherever you find yourself on your journey of faith this morning. I hope to offer a word of encouragement. I hope to show you that seeking alignment, and I'll talk about that in a minute, how seeking alignment is in and of itself evidence, proof, something to point at and say that you are growing in your journey. So here's, if you get one thing this morning, I'm giving you my big idea right up top. There's no mystery. And it is this. Part of what it means to chase after a life in Christ is to continually be transformed through the process of alignment. Part of what it means to chase after this life in Christ, part of what that means is that you are continually open to the process of being transformed through alignment. The process of faith is not about a destination. There is not a point in which you have arrived. And if you have arrived, you have transcended even that of the good Apostle Paul, because Paul himself said, I have not yet arrived. I've not yet arrived. I'm still stumbling. I'm still figuring stuff out. I'm still doing what I can to move myself forward. It's not about arriving. It's about a journey. It's about a dance. The philosopher Alan Watts talks about the dance of life. And so what I want to suggest to you is that part of what it means to chase after this life in Christ, part of what it means to be a Christ follower, is this continual transformation. And I'm going to talk about it through the lens of alignment with you this morning. So what I want to do is, here's my plan. I'm going to talk about my journey of alignment in three different ways, okay, because I'm a preacher, so you have to have 3 points, right? So three different ways. I'm going to talk about the way alignment has shown up in my life. Then I'm going to talk about the hero's journey as seen through some mythological narratives. I'll talk about the hero's journey, and then I'm going to talk about you and your journey, where you're at. But in order to get to where you and you're at, I want you to think ahead this. Get this simmering, get this sautéing in your skull for the next 10, 15, 20 minutes. Think about some aspect of your life. Some aspect of your life where either, one, you are faced with the potential to change. Some aspect of your life where perhaps you are currently changing. And then some aspect of your life where maybe you have recently made a change. Whatever comes up for you, either immediately, some of you have things already that are coming up for you, which is fantastic. Some of you might not have anything come up till about halfway through my talk. Some maybe at the very end, and some maybe at lunchtime, you might finally, like, oh, I can sort of identify that. But this could be a religious conviction. So this could be a point of doctrinal belief that you are currently in the process of potentially experiencing a change in that. Or maybe you, like, have just changed something. This could be a political conviction of some sort, that you have been confronted with new ideas or new thoughts, and you are wondering if change is on the horizon, or maybe you have experienced a change. This could be relational. So maybe you are on the precipice of a new relationship, or maybe you have just started a new relationship, or maybe you just sort of transitioned out of one and you're in this new phase of life. So I want you to think in any parts of your life where you are either facing the potential to change, where you are currently experiencing a change, or where you've just recently made a change. And I kind of just want you to hold that. Just hold that, because we're going to come back to that in a little bit. Hold on to what is some ways in your life right now where change might be happening, where change might be a possibility, or where change just recently happened and you're trying to figure out now, what in the world does life look like? Okay? So let me say a word of prayer, and then I'm going to dive into some stuff. Would you pray with me? And before I lead my own church in prayer, I just invite everybody to take a deep breath in and exhale. Maybe just do that one more time. Just take a deep breath in and exhale. There are those here this morning, God, that are perhaps questioning why they're sitting in the seat. Why am I here? What am I doing? There are those here because a loved one, a family member, a friend has brought them or invited them, and they're kind of here out of a sense of obligation. They're kind of here just to not rock the boat. There are those here, God, who cannot wait for Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. because that is the time they get to be with their people. That is the time they get to come and be with their family. That is the time they get to take a breath from the chaotic frenzy of life. And even if it's just for 60, 70 minutes, they get to breathe in a reminder that they are loved by God. There are those that are here this morning, God, because it's just part of their routine. It's part of the rhythm of life. They just do it. They've been doing it for years. They don't necessarily come with any level of animosity or any level of excitement. They're just here because it's just kind of what we do. There are those here with all sorts of questions and curiosities, doubts, frustrations, angst. And God, what I'm trying to name is that in this room, there are dozens of different current states of mind and heart and soul. And for me to try to step into this space as a stranger, as someone from a different part of the country, for me to try to come in and speak a word of encouragement is a little bit ridiculous. Because I don't know them and they don't know me, so what does it matter what I have to say? And how in the world can what I say touch on all the different places where all the different people are? So God, here's my prayer. I hope that whatever I have to say, if there's anything good, if there's anything true, if there's anything that would be helpful for people in their journey of faith, my prayer is that you would, through your spirit, which is alive in every single person here, that you would translate that and let that sink into people's hearts and minds this morning. That if anything I say would be helpful for their journey, God, would you let it resonate in their hearts all day, all week, however long, until you can do the work in them that you want to do. And God, my prayer is also, if anything I'm about to say is untrue, if anything I'm about to say is would be unhelpful for someone in their journey, then by your grace, may we forget it the minute I say it. And may we leave here ultimately different than how we came because we engaged with the divine. And so may the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be pleasing to you, O God. And the loved sons and daughters of God said, that's you. And the loved sons and daughters of God said, ah, there you are. You are with me, even if I have to force it out of you. Okay, so I'm going to talk about three ways in which alignment has shown up for me in my life. Three ways in which this process of alignment has shown up for me in my life. The first way that I'll talk about it is this: an alignment of the head with your heart. An alignment of your head with your heart. It's a little bit oversimplistic, but bear with me here. So the alignment of what you think with how you feel, your head and your heart. for me, I grew up, I'm a recovering Baptist, as I think some of you in the room are as well. And I grew up in a very conservative, evangelically rooted tradition, which is beautiful in many ways, and I'm grateful for my heritage. And what happened is I graduated from high school and I went to a Christian college to get my degree to become a pastor. I graduated and I was cruising towards success, whatever the heck that means, in the evangelical world. I was like poster boy for millennial pastor. I had all the right answers. I had everything figured out, as you do when you're 23 years old. And I had sort of just this framework for what the Bible was and how, who we were and who God was and how to make sense of it all, and I could answer everything. When it came to the particular topic of those who are born and do not identify as straight, I just held what the tribe that I grew up in, their position. It was sinful, not God's best, not any different or worse than other sins, just sins, and that was about the end of it. I didn't really think much beyond that. When I, about a year after graduating, I was working as an associate worship pastor at a pretty large church in Oregon where I grew up, and I was going through the process to get licensed as a pastor. So in this denomination, you had to submit some paperwork, and then you had to sit through an interview with some seasoned ministers where they would pepper you with all the questions about the denomination. And the point is, can we say that you are fit to be a pastor? Like, this is the thing. And so if you pass the interview, then you get to be called pastor, which I don't really care about being called that. But I did care about being seen by people and being affirmed in that way. And so I'm studying for this interview, and I'm going through the manual, like the policies and procedures manual of the denomination. And I get to this line. I don't even remember what the context was, but I get to this line, and I read this line that says, practicing homosexuals, already I'm curious, what does that mean? Like, is that different than, anyway, practicing homosexuals shall not be permitted to be members of the church. And I remember reading that at 23 years old, firmly grounded in this, you know, sin sort of thing, reading that, and my heart just sank. Like, what? Like, sure, I get that it's sinful, and I get that maybe they, you know, whatever, but they can't be a member of it. Like, we'll let them, and then it went on, and it said they can't serve in leadership positions. And so I'm thinking, okay, so we'll gladly take their tithes and offerings. We'll let them serve in volunteer roles as long as nobody sees them, but they can't be members or they can't have leadership. Like, this feels weird to me. And so I'm sitting in the licensing interview process, and normally they're about 30 minutes long. Mine went 3 hours long, in part because they were churning through this, and I was wrestling through it. But that was the first time for me that I noticed this disconnect between my head and my heart. My head firmly rooted in sort of this theological way of seeing this, and yet my heart, for the first time, I noticed, wait, I don't know that I fully can, like, go there with this kind of discrimination. So when I talk about the process of transformation through alignment, one of the ways in which we experience alignment is we realize that what we think and believe about things and how we feel about it, sometimes there's a disconnect. And I wonder if that's ever been true for you. If you've ever held a religious or political or social way of thinking about things, and yet down here in your gut, you're like, but I feel kind of differently about that. And so that set me on a journey that would take several years of studying the clobber passages and of trying to find the alignment, trying to figure out, what do I do with this tension? How do I resolve this? Can it be resolved? And so for me, the studying of the Bibles and the context and the languages and all that led me to a place where I no longer believe that the Bible condemns those who identify LGBTQ, and I no longer believe that the Bible provides a blanket condemnation for any and all same-gender relationships. So I experienced at some point, you know, in my journey, this alignment of the head and the heart. Ah, that feels good. Okay, now the tension is resolved and I feel good about it. But here's the thing. At that point, by the time I resolved that tension, I had moved from Oregon to Arizona to join a young church just outside of Phoenix. I didn't know, young, you know, naive boy growing up in Oregon, I didn't know how conservative Arizona was. I just didn't know the culture that I was getting into. But I also didn't know where I was. Like, I had started this journey kind of left of center. And here, me and my family, two kids at the time moved outside of Phoenix, and we joined this church that's rooted in this really evangelical way of thinking about things. And I, a couple years into it, began to be aware that I don't belong here. I don't fit very well here. There's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of ways in which me and this church sort of get along. So here's the second way that I experience and want to talk about alignment. Sometimes alignment means matching up your internal convictions with your external reality. Have you ever noticed yourself in an environment? This could be work, this could be family, this could be church, where you have these convictions inside. You have these ways of thinking about the world. You have these deep-seated values. And yet the world around you is in disagreement with that. And you feel like you don't belong. You feel like if I were to sort of open up a little bit and share some of this, it wouldn't go very well. Can you relate to that? Has anybody noticed that experience, that phenomenon in their life? So I noticed this when I was at this church in Arizona. I was there for 5 years total, but it was about the three-year mark where I realized this is something's not working here. And the few times that I did try to maybe come peek out a little bit and say, I kind of think of this about this thing, I kind of think this about this thing, wasn't about any LGBTQ stuff. It was just this. Every time I did, I was confirmed that this is not a safe place to do that. I would have people show up at my house and launch into tirades about how if you think this, then this, and this. I would have people that would like stalk me on Facebook just to see if I posted anything that fell outside of kind of their way of seeing the world. And so I realized really quickly, like, I don't belong here. And for a while, can I just tell you, I went through a season where I thought I was, I felt really disingenuous. So some of you nodded your head. Yes, I can relate to that time in my life where I had this sense of on the inside, these internal convictions, but on the outside, it didn't match with that. Can you relate to that feeling of, man, I feel like I'm a fraud? I feel like I'm a fraud. Bruce Springsteen just had his new autobiography come out. And the opening lines of Bruce Springsteen's autobiography is, I grew up in a boardwalk town where everything was tinged with a bit of fraud. And so am I. And I read that. I'm like, yes, I can. I have felt like a fraud because I can't tell people what I think. They'll freak out. They'll think I'm this. It'll cause disruption. It'll cause chaos, whatever it is. And so I'm at this church in Arizona, and I'm just hiding. I'm hiding. I'm not letting people, you know. And conversely, by the way, do you know what happens when you hide from people what you think and feel? Your relationships suffer. Or you don't even build relationships. When I left that church in Arizona, and I'll get to that in a minute, I realized that all of my relationships there were like a mile wide and an inch deep. Because the way that you connect with other people is you open up and you say, this is who I am. This is me. That's how you connect with other people, is you see them and they see you. When you're closed off to people, you don't connect with people. Those aren't real relationships. And so I experienced in my time in Arizona, like, I don't have real relationships. I don't have people I trust. I don't have people that know me and see me and love me. And it all came to a head September 20th, 2011. Do you guys remember that night? Anybody? I didn't really think you did, but that'd be awesome if somebody was like, I remember September 20th, 2011. Okay, that was the night that President Obama signed the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So Don't Ask, Don't Tell was the military ban against gays and lesbians in the military. And for me, at that point in my life, I viewed that policy, and you can have whatever opinion on you want, that's fine. For me, I viewed that as a discrimination, just, you know, to tell people that they can serve our country and die for our country, but we don't, not if you're like gay or lesbian. And so for me, that night on that repeal, I shared on my Facebook, nothing ever good comes of that. Let me just start right there. Like, nothing really ever good comes out of Facebook. I don't know what I was thinking. But I shared on Facebook this article, just announcing the repeal, not taking a position or arguing anything, just announcing that it happened. And I put six words. I'm glad this day finally came. That was it. I shared it. I went to bed. I thought, oh, that's cool. Like, discrimination is over. Woke up the next morning, Wednesday morning. That was a Tuesday night. Wednesday morning, I woke up. And as you can imagine, those in my church, and our church at that time was about 1,500 people. And there was just a barrage of comments of why is a pastor supporting homosexuality? How can a Christian be actively advocating the gay agenda? What's there to be glad about? I got to the office that morning, and my boss, the lead pastor, called me into his office, and he shared all the calls and texts and emails that he got last night, the night before, over this. And he pleaded with me to take it down. I'm like, sure, I'll take it down. I took it down. I thought that'd be the end of it. And then I get a call that night from one of the elders that hadn't seen my post but had heard about what was going on and said, you know, I call because I want to talk to you about the situation. Just so you know, if you ever move from being a pastor to a situation, this is not a good thing, okay? This is not a good thing. And he went on to inform me that an emergency board meeting had been called for Friday morning to deal with this. And so I go to the office on Thursday, and I know that on the following morning, I'm going to be sitting in a room with the elders, and I'm likely going to be confronted on my theology on sexuality. I need to be prepared for this. So I typed up a letter because I knew in the moment I would get super anxious and I probably wouldn't speak very well. So I typed up a letter, and then Friday morning I get to the office, and I'm summoned into a room with eight men. Where's my female elders at? Dana, yeah, thank you for, like, and there's other, yes, thank you. This church is not there yet. So you guys are doing fantastic. And I'm sitting in this room, and for the first time, like the first question, I sit down, and I barely even make an indentation with my butt in the seat before the chair of the elder says, Colby, we need to know if you think homosexuality is a sin or not. And so I whip out the 10-page letter, and I kind of read it with him. And as I tell the story of my book, the fear in the room was palpable. So much panic and worry and anxiety that I would somehow, like, poison the flock. I hadn't been talking about it. I hadn't told anybody my thoughts. Remember, I'm doing this game. I'm closed off. I'm not telling anybody. My wife knows. Her and I have traveled this journey together, but I'm not telling anybody else. And so here I am exposing myself to these eight men in this room and telling them things that I've never even told my own family about these internal convictions that I have. The meeting concludes and they say, don't bother coming in on Sunday. We'll fill your spot. Just take the weekend off. Little did I know that means I would never see the church again. Because then on the following Tuesday morning, I'm brought back into another meeting. And this time I'm handed a letter of termination. Within 1 week time, 5 years of ministry had been undone because in my mind rested this conviction that the Bible perhaps does not condemn. And so even though I had found this alignment between my head and my heart, and there was this sense of, okay, like the tension is gone and what I think and what I feel have now sort of married, like then when I had this other sense of what I believe on the inside is not matching my external reality, I had to find alignment again. And this time it was a little bit forced upon me and also a little bit like I brought it on myself. And so now I'm fired from this church. My wife and I have to sell our home, pack everything up, and move back to Oregon to kind of lick our wounds a little bit and figure out what in the world is next. But I'm experiencing now this alignment. Okay, at least I don't have to hide anymore. At least I don't have to hide anymore. At least, like, I call it coming out of the theological closet. Like, I'm out, and I don't have to hide anymore, and I can talk about it and not worry about what's going to happen, because in many ways, the worst thing that could have happened did happen. And that's what started the seeds of the study for the book. And so I share that with you because I want you to see how sometimes alignment is about what we think and what we feel. Sometimes alignment is about what's going on the inside with, like, what our external situation is. And we go through this process of hiding. And the invitation to alignment is to come out and try to match what we think with what we say. And then the third way that alignment can show up is our core values, aligning our core values, again, those deep-seated convictions and beliefs, aligning those with our everyday rhythm, aligning those with how we function in the world, how we practice life. For me, the way this worked out is my wife and I, and at that time, 3.5 kids, well, 3 3/4, she was really pregnant. We moved back to Oregon to figure out what in the world was next. And we got lined up through some mutual friends with a church in San Diego, and they offered me a job to come down there, and I came down there, and I was there for about 18 months, and it didn't work out for a number of reasons. So if anybody asks, I have the spiritual gift of getting fired, so 2 churches in 2 years. And I remember the Sunday after getting terminated from the second church in San Diego. And my wife and I are in the kitchen. Kids have gone to bed. And we're reflecting on how the heck we got to this point in life. And I'm wondering, are my friends right in telling me, like, just get out of this game? Like, this is 2 churches in 2 years now. What the heck are you doing? Like, go find something else to do. Clearly, this is not, like, maybe a wise vocation for you. And I remember talking with my wife, and we're living in a house, a rental house in San Diego. And we have all 4 of our children had come at that point. And we had 1 bathroom with no bathtub. So when you have small children, having no bathtub is a bit of a challenge. It can be done with big Rubbermaid tubs, but it's still a challenge. And we had no backyard. And so when you have 4 small children, having no place for them to play. I don't know if you can conceptualize this because I see your houses and I see your yards, acres. So I don't know if you know this, but there are some places in the world where there's like just a house and then a house and then a house and then a house and there's nothing. And so we had no bathtub and we had no backyard. And we had no job again. But you know what we did have? This time around, we had people. This time around, we had friends. We had relationships. And you know why? Because remember when I said, like, the way you connect with people is you open up and say, this is me? And we didn't do that in Arizona. But when we moved to San Diego, I had found alignment. My insides and my outsides, like, I wasn't hiding anymore. So this church that we found that brought us down to San Diego, we started to make real, meaningful relationships with people. Because we finally, like, this is me. This is who I am. And we started to actually build real, deep, meaningful, connective relationships with people. Last night I went to, where was that? Provision? Is that the name of it? Yeah, with Josh and some of the elders and some of the staff. I'm witnessing the beauty of these like 10, 12 people. And I can see like, okay, you guys know each other and you trust each other and it's good and there's love here. And for the first time in my adult life in San Diego, I got to experience that. I got to experience real relationships because I had finally aligned my insides with my outsides. And so we're standing there in the kitchen with my wife and I. Kids are in bed, no backyard, no bathtub. And we have in the periphery a couple friends, like maybe 12 friends from our previous church that said, look, if you stay in San Diego, we will help you start something. Because this church that fired you, we recognize there's toxicity there, and we just can't support that, so we don't have a church home either. If you stay, we'll support you. So my wife says to me, I think I choose relationships over a backyard and a bathtub, which for us meant no matter how hard it is to stay in this context and raise six people in San Diego, no matter how hard that is, we have found real relationships here, and we're not leaving. And so we decided, okay, next Sunday, if you guys want to come over, we'll have coffee, bring your kids, and we'll just kind of do this. And we started a house church. And over 3 months, it grew from 12 to 15 to 20 to 30 to 40. By the time we hit like 50 people crammed in our living room, we thought, oh, this doesn't make sense anymore. We should probably find somewhere. And so now we rent a grade school. And I share that with you because now another part of alignment is I have these core convictions, these core values of how to sort of be in the world, people of faith and mercy and justice and kindness. And I have this convictions that, no, you can actually build communities like this that are centered around this vision of the kingdom that Jesus has and yet are also kind of progressively bent a little bit and have this other way of seeing the world. Like, you can do that. You can actually build communities like that. And so we found these relationships in San Diego, and we're like, let's do this. And so we started to enact now putting these deep-seated core values into our everyday practice and rhythm. That's one way that it showed up. Okay, is to just sort of now practice the things every day that I believe. Let me share with you one more way, because that's kind of the professional way I found alignment in this. Now let me share a personal way. So here's another way that you can experience this alignment of your kind of core values with your everyday rhythm. Some of you still might be a little bit uncertain how this is different than the other one. I have spent the last year in therapy once or twice a month, meeting with a counselor, which I put off long enough. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, why did I put that off? If you've never done therapy, best thing in the world. Go talk to someone. And in therapy, one of the things that I realized that is true about me is I am deeply convinced that the only reason people like me, that the only reason people love me, the only reason people respect or admire or in some context follow me is because of what I can do for them. Like, that's it. That's why people like me, is because of what I have to offer, what I do. Not me. Like, I don't have inherent value or worth. That's not why people like me. They just like me because of what I can do for them. And so I've spent my entire life assessing every situation, assessing every interaction, like in milliseconds, and deciding what's the role that I need to play here. What's the hat that I need to put on? Who do I need to be in this situation so I can fulfill your expectations of me so that you can like me? Because you won't like me, you'll just like what I can do for you. So let me figure out how I can do for you the best. And through therapy, I realized that I do this and that it happens. And this is how I was formed as a child. And this is how I still function as an adult. Now I am working on this new deep value conviction of, I actually am loved just as I am. Like, not just by God, but even by other people in my life. Like, I am worthy. I'm enough. Brene Brown talks about, like, we hustle for our worthiness. I've been hustling for my worthiness for 34 freaking years. And now I'm like, you know what? I am enough. I think people might actually love me just for me. But now I'm having to figure out how to align that with my everyday practice so that I stop hustling for my worthiness, so that I stop fretting over how do I make you happy? How do I make you like me? How do I perform for you so that you respect me? So even to go back last night, like, put me in that situation maybe 2 years ago, and I probably would have morphed, and I would have figured out within the context of the table, who do I need to be in this group environment so that I can be liked? And last night I realized, you know what, I'm just going to be me, and maybe that means I don't talk for 30 minutes and I just sit there quietly, and I'm totally fine with that. And this is part of my, like, practicing everyday rhythm of, I'm just going to try to be me and trust that that's enough for people. Does that make sense a little bit? How you have this alignment between your core, and then you have to practice that. Okay, so three ways in which alignment has shown up in my life: the head and the heart, aligning your internal convictions with your external reality, and then aligning your core values with your everyday practice and rhythm. Now, let me talk quickly about the hero's journey. Last 5 minutes here. In ancient mythological literature, you have oftentimes this pattern that the hero goes on. And Alexander Shaya, who's a scholar, has done some work in mapping the hero's journey to the spiritual life. And so the hero's journey, there's four stages. One is the summons. This is when the hero is called to go and quest, called to go and do something. This is the summons. The second stage then is the obstacles. After the summons, you go on your quest and you face various obstacles. Think of Odysseus and what he had to do and all the obstacles. The third stage of the hero's journey is the gift. You have overcome the obstacles and you have received the gift. You have got what you were trying to get. And then the fourth stage, you know, a lot of, like, movies and TV shows, they just take you up to the receiving of the gift, right? So the main character in most movies, they overcome the obstacles, and then the credits roll once, you know, Han and Leia are getting married. You know, they don't show afterwards when they go back to the Millennium Falcon and, like, oh wait, now who gets to control the controller? You know what I mean? Like, you don't get. So the fourth stage is, like, returning to life with this change, with this gift, and figuring out, how do you function now in your community? How do you function in your world? How do you function as a new person after having gone through the change? Does that make sense? So this is the hero's journey. And what I suggest to you is, the hero's journey helps us understand a bit of our own process of transformation, especially as seen through this alignment language. And so what I want to close with today is, I want to close by saying, where are you in one part of your journey? So earlier I asked you maybe to consider, is there some way in your life that you are faced with the potential of change? Is there some point in your life in which there's a disconnect between how you think about things and how you feel about things? And you can see the tension, you can name it. And sometimes when you're quiet with yourself, you can experience this deep tension. Is there ways in which you are undergoing change right now? Maybe you have had some conversations where you begin to verbalize new thoughts and feelings and ideas. And you take that brave step of saying, I want to share with you, I want to open up a little bit. And you're in this process now of engaging all of the intricacies of that process. Or maybe you have done that. You've seen the head and heart tension. You have found an alignment there. You started to talk about it. Now you're trying to navigate. Okay, now how do I go to Thanksgiving in a couple weeks and be with some family members who perhaps might ask questions about the church that I go to? How do I navigate that? How do I still bring my yams without losing my mind? It's basically why you came to church today. Like, how do I do that? How do I return now back to my normal life and function? And so I just want to end by saying, and this is the word of encouragement, that if you this morning are in that first stage where you can sense the potential for changes, you notice there's a tension between how you think and how you feel about something, and there's some part of your life that is calling out for you to examine change, what I want to say is I want to pray for you this morning that you have faith as you explore openness. Faith is not the things that we believe. Faith is this opening of the heart space to something new. This is, I think, a much more helpful understanding of what faith is. And so I pray for you as you begin to explore aligning your head and your heart on some things. I pray that you would have faith as you explore this new openness, that you would know that this too is part of the journey. There is no shame. There is no shame in naming that I'm out of alignment on this thing. I don't know what to think about it. That is part of the spiritual life. That's part of growth. If you're in this stage, you're growing, baby. Like, don't think, oh, I'm stuck out of alignment and I can't wait one day to like experience growth in my life. No. This is growth. This is part of what it means to pursue a life in Christ. Some of you might be in the obstacle stage, and so you have experienced a little bit of alignment on some things, and you're starting to share that with people, and you are getting some opposition. And so I pray for you that you would have strength as you engage opposition. For me, I had probably 4 people in my life that when I got fired because of my theology on sexuality, I had 4 people that were praying for me strength as I faced opposition. And there were days when I needed it more than others because I thought the whole stinking world was against me. Have you ever felt like the whole world is against you? It's not. You are not alone. You are not alone. And I pray for you strength as you endure and face and engage opposition. If you find yourself recently having experienced a new way of seeing things, a change, an alignment in some way, and you are kind of right now the recipients of a gift, or the recipients of alignment, the recipients of, I kind of feel like my insides and my outsides match, maybe for the first time. I pray for you grace, that you would receive that as gift that comes with a new awareness. I pray for you that you would have a spirit of generosity and big-heartedness to the universe, to God, to Christ, to whomever, that you would just be thankful that this is the stage that you're at in life. Because it's not the end. You're going to, at some point, hit stage 1 again, and you're going to be faced with the opportunity to change again. And so I pray for you grace as you enjoy the new awareness that you have on something. And then finally, maybe you are now in this place of how do I now do my everyday life having undergone a change? How do I, in my marriage, we've started to name some things that have been unhealthy for a number of years. And we've started to bring up some patterns that have brought us to some really scary places. And we begin to name them and work through them. And we begin to even find some ways in which we can see a new future. But now we got to practice it. I have all these old tapes playing of how my parents treated me and how our relationship used to be. And now I have to do all this hard work of creating new tapes. And if this is you, if you're in this stage of, I used to think this way about God for so long, and now I've had this faith, this openness to maybe think of it in a different way, and yet now I don't really know what's next. Like, I don't really know how to do life. This way at least made sense. This way, I just don't know. I pray for you. I pray for you courage as you begin to find new practices and new rhythms in life. I pray for you courage as you lean into a community like Morgantown Community Church, which is a place where you are safe, where you are seen, where you are loved, where you are held, where you are respected, where you are valued, where you are cherished. I pray that you would trust that this new change that might have happened in your life or is happening is all part of the process. And no matter what place you find yourself in any of these stages, what I want to say to you is that is evidence that Spirit is at work in your life. Do not think for a second that you have to get all the way through this to be able to attest to the work of God in your life. I want to say, no matter where you're at and anything in your life, if you are undergoing some change, if you're undergoing some transformation, that is God at work in you. And it is good. And it is good. Can I pray for you? God, it has been such a joy in my own life to be able to reflect on the ways in which I found alignment and the ways in which you have led me through that, and to get to share that with some new friends here in Kentucky. For that, I say thank you. It's a gift. It's grace. I pray for those in the room who need faith, that you would instill in them this desire to want to always be open to light, to truth, to change. I pray for those this morning who need strength, who are enduring all sorts of funky conversations, challenging relational things, obstacles at work, obstacles in their own house, in their own family. I pray that you would reinforce them this morning. For those who have recently experienced this transformation in their life around something, may they be gracious and be thankful for the gift. And then may those who are now trying to figure out, what does my new life look like with this thing that is now different, I pray courage and bravery to step forward every day knowing they are a loved child of God. Be brave. And then to be kind, because everyone else is a child of God too. We love you, God. We thank you. We trust you, and we'll follow you as best we can. Amen.
Colby is going to be back at the table. You may be able to see it. It's got a big...